Well, hey, welcome to you Early Bird guys. How are you? I hope everything is going great. Thanks for your eagerness to be here. My automated colleague says how many people are on the line when I dial in. I want to address a couple of questions while we're still on speaker mode. Thank you discussion mode. Thank you for managing the background noise because I'm eager to get any thoughts, questions, input that you have. I wanted to address a combined response in a way to two or three of the questions by a piece that was in this last Sunday's New York Times, March 19th. It was titled, "Can I Fight Cancer with Mere Thought?" And the subtitle was, "A Neuroscientist Considers Why His Cancer Has Stopped Growing." I thought this had particular impact and really brings into focus some of the things that we have begun to talk about in terms of approaching something systematically and looking at a plan. So here's just a brief synopsis of this article. This is in the genre of mind-body medicine. The author was urged to meditate, breathe deeply, pray, or exercise by his father, a psychoanalyst. So he did good despite being the son of a psychoanalyst. He's a well-known neuroscientist himself at this point. And he was skeptical, as a neuroscientist, of explanations offered about the effectiveness of mind-body medicine and things that to a true scientist are kind of vague and kind of woo, like energy flow and resonance. And how he described what he called his baloney detector rang out clear and strong. But his dad, who was very avant-garde for the old school of psychoanalysts, incorporated what we now know of science in those discussions. Talking is not just about catharsis or revising stories, but it works by subtly changing the function of the brain. When practices like meditation and exercise are practiced, they act through the mind-body connection and change the biology of both. The author, Dr. David Linden, is a professor of neuroscience at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And they don't just stay with woo-woo stuff there. For example, focused breathing regulates regions of the brain that couple pain with negative emotional tones. So focused breathing can attenuate pain perception not just by focus and psychological experience, but by electrical signals that are conveyed from breathing centers to emotional pain centers to reduce activity in these pain centers. And like a true scientist, Linden tested these theories for their validity and effectiveness, even when they were originally from somebody who might not otherwise know, a psychoanalyst. So biologically, the brain communicates with the body by nerve fibers releasing transmitters. And this happens also in the same way to cancer cells. And there have been applications now to lung, skin, breast, prostate, pancreas, and gastrointestinal system cancers. Certain signals slow cancer progression. Fast forward, he was given a 6 to 8 month prognosis. He currently is surviving 4 times the prognosis of the 6 months. And he's doing very, very well. So it's an interesting article, and I thought it was, so for those of you who are interested in looking at some applications of wellness, this is exactly what we talk about in coaching. This is our forte. Our first question, what would you like to focus on? Because we know that focus activates and channels the energy field of the brain. And when we focus on one thing, what the client determines – the client takes ownership of the story and focus. That's what makes coaching a unique engagement, and combined with a collaborative model with the focus on the client and developing the client's story, it continues that uniqueness of coaching that can be immensely applicable in terms of wellness. And think about how unique what we do is from any other profession, from any other healthcare or related kind of professional. We focus on the client, collaboratively create a new story, initiated and shaped by the client. They take ownership, they're the point of reference, and we work with a map. And remember, we talked early on, if you want to change, don't focus just on the goal, but look at the system. And the focus aligns that, and the map of the conversation is a form of that applied focus. We also talked about a model of this is mindfulness meditation. It's a focus just on breath and relaxation. Whatever else occurs, you let it go. A thought occurs, which is the job description of the brain, you just let it go. Same with what we do in coaching. When a client determines a focus and they have a detour or a distraction or get off in the weeds, we help them refocus on that story. And that's part of why I think it's useful to ask for permission to interrupt, because you don't want to wait for somebody to get all tired pursuing the weeds. You want to do it immediately, because that's what they'll need to do to be most effective. So I hope that was a different kind of answer for some of the questions you've asked. Any thoughts or questions or additions at this point from anyone? You want to add or ask anything to the things you've sent in, which have been very helpful to me about what you'd most like us to focus on and what would be most useful for you to take away? Anyone want to add or ask anything? One of the things that I wanted to respond to in terms of a couple of other questions is the power of framing and decisions. We've touched on that, but I want to look at it just briefly before we get into what we're supposed to be talking about. In terms of the biggest problem and the biggest opportunity for us as coaches is the same. How we frame our focus and thereby our expectations. We determine what we focus on and then the meaning that we attach. We decide what to focus on as well as what we then decide to do. So a framework of challenge rather than a problem, which is the approach of everything from consultants to therapists to other professionals. Rather than the problem, it's about opportunity to determine how we proceed. When you focus on a problem, you go down a known pathway in the brain, even though you create some possibilities of resolution of that problem, every time you etch it further in the brain, which is why some people get stuck in therapy. What we do, though, is to look as quickly as possible at the present experience to frame it as an opportunity or challenge, because that's what creates new neuronal connections and networks. It's a different framework, and you get a very different kind of engagement and response. So this is how we decide what to focus on, the framework of challenge rather than a problem of opportunity to determine how we proceed. And we have to do this consciously, because if we don't pay as much attention to it, meaning we resort to the default mode and do it unconsciously, an emotional trigger can instantly boot up a mindset that then contains a time capsule of problems or negative self-talk or limitations or unconscious biases, old ways of dealing with things that, while they seem familiar, can be very limiting. So I hope that has addressed some of the really excellent questions you guys have sent in. Anything you want to add or ask at this point before we get into the topic?
Sure, David. This is Helen. I remember there was
Welcome.
A book
hey.
Called...
I was getting lonely there. Go ahead.
Sure. There is a book called The Healing Code, which is similar to your strategy of using the brain and mind to actually heal cancers or any other problems.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's an excellent book and a very important book to really bring in the neuroscience of how focus can engage and create a whole field that's mind and brain connection. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Was there something else about that you wanted to mention?
No, what you talk about really remind me of that book. I think I read a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
So thank you.
Yeah, great reference for everyone and a perspective that just puts, you know, conceptualizes it in a little bit of a different way, but it's the essence of what we're talking about applying mind, brain, and I would say performance science to strategic coaching, and specifically, as our discussion goes, to wellness. So thanks. Thanks, Helen. Who else? If no other comments, jot down any questions or thoughts you have. I'll reserve some time at the end briefly to go over anything you want to clarify or add or ask. So hold on. We're going to go on lecture mode so you don't have to manage the background noise. Okay, so we're going to be talking about, we've talked about the first four steps, recognizing authorship of your wellness story, owning your story, assessing the plot and storylines, and deciding what to change. So the fifth step of the roadmap, the acronym, is MAP, Wellness Strategies. There are a couple of workbook exercises I'd particularly like to highlight on page 2.12, 14 steps to edit your story, and two pages later, five steps to revise a storyline. See if these are helpful to you. See if they add to how you go about creating a systematic way to change a story, to understand and change a story for yourself and for your client. So, as we've discussed, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they haven't changed. And we've talked about how information, data, facts don't change anyone's mind. Many years ago, still practicing at that time as a physician, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting. I had one of the first couple of eating disorder treatment programs in the country back when nobody knew much about eating disorders, if you can imagine that, and this was the early to mid-80s. A coaching approach is different than what is done, and I recognize in looking back, mine was closer to a coaching approach to look at what the person really wanted and engage in a collaborative way to help the person get to where they wanted to be rather than superimposing rules or restrictions or looking at it simply as a problem. So when people need nudges, they're least likely, let me say that a different way. People are least likely to make good choices when they are under stress or pressure or when they're reacting to other people. So sometimes what we do in coaching is to focus on decisions that are really difficult or rare. Things that usually people don't get feedback about, or when they have trouble translating something into understandable terms, or when they persist in re-entering the old story, which etches it further in the brain every time, as we just talked. So what I want to highlight here are six essential elements to map change. And this is to plan collaboratively with a client about what to change after they've recognized, owned, assessed, and decided what to change in work with you as a coach from their point of reference, not you running in plays, not you ghostwriting it, not making suggestions camouflaged as a question. So there are six crucial elements to map change. And when these are understood and incorporated, I think it can help significantly. One, regulate states of mind. A state of mind is like a software program. It's a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and how we process information. We each have a number of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. Each of these has its own software program. A key element is to be aware of different states of mind and which state works best for what purpose. A simple example: creative writing and editing. Two different states of mind, two different parts of brain, to focus and be immersed in the flow of each of these when it's time can be significant. The emotional brain can hijack and hold hostage the intellectual logical brain, and this is true especially at times of stress. So how do you regulate states of mind? I think it's one of the more important things that we do as coaches is to help someone be aware, to develop self-awareness and self-reflection, and especially to help them regulate states of mind. I've mentioned the webinar that you can access from the very bottom of my homepage of MentorPath about states of mind. So I just want to look at an application here. What do you think these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Janis Joplin, Kurt Cobain. They never learn the crucial success strategy of managing their states of mind. To use drugs, alcohol, other people, or some addictive substance to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. The state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus, and the meaning you attach determines your behavior. The state of mind determines essentially how we perceive and process things. There are two primary ways to regulate your state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology is how you regulate your state of mind based on attention and focus to your own physiology, such as breathing. This is how, I believe, mindfulness meditation and a focus on breathing and relaxation is a model for what we do in coaching. The process, not the content. The process is that we engage with a client for the client to determine a focus, and we pursue that to the intended result or the ideal outcome from the client's point of view. So that's the map: where you are, where you're going. And the focus is on the process of engagement, not the content. So what we know from quantum physics and from neuroscience, what you focus on is what you get. Not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. What you pay attention to can determine your state of mind. And since that determines the meaning you attach, that meaning will determine your behavior. So your power is in your focus. So the questions that we usually ask determine what we focus on. What does this mean? What should I do? If you have something that's habitual that you like or don't like, pay attention to that. Pay attention to how you get what you want or how you repeat something. Because in a way, the quality of life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask daily. You may need to change the question. Ask a better question. Think about this. All of us are each asking a question or questions from the instant that we wake up. Before we ever turn on the bedside lamp, there are questions. Now, most of the time, this whole thing, this process is unconscious. But sometimes it can be very conscious. Let me give you an example. I was asked by a buddy of mine who's a chair of Vistage, the Mastermind CEO and Business Owners Group. There were, I think, maybe 18 or 19 people in her group. They meet once a month for a day. And she asked me to come and talk with and work with the group because two of the members, one was a CEO, another was a business owner, had both had similar kind of tragedies at their business, and one had involved a loss of life and some injuries. Another had involved a serious accident and a shattering of morale in the companies. And both of the people, the CEO and the business person and the business owner in her group, had been ruminating about this, had been less effective, but couldn't get over it, and were beginning to succumb to the stress. One had been 3, another 4 months ago. So what we did is to look at the whole spectrum of this, but what I suggested, what this came down to, I'm going to tell you the bottom line here. What I suggested to them after a discussion, not a lecture or presentation, because they needed to talk and they needed to have that facilitate. What I suggested to each of the people, those two people in particular, emphasizing what I just did, that we always are asking ourselves questions from the instant we wake up, to engineer that, to create some choice architecture here. Sometime during the day, or sometime at least before they go to bed, write down three questions that would, when they answer them, put them in a positive, empowered, engaging state of mind. And as soon as they wake up, as soon as they turn on their bedside lamp, before their feet ever touch the floor, take those three questions and answer them. The report I got back from my buddy who ran the group was that 1 in 7 days, another in 10 days, they had indicated that the whole atmosphere at their companies, because it was such a trickle-down effect, and they were the leaders, and they were determining, sort of, in a way, the state of mind and engagement of everyone, that it had reversed both for the individuals, that they were free of this for the first time in the 3 and 4 months, but it also had the effect throughout the organization. So there's nothing magical about this. It's simply that a focus determines not just the energy field, but the whole framework that you engage. Remember when we talked about that in the first seminar, that, for example, our brains can't tell between anxiety and excitement. How you frame it determines how you proceed. A framework here of 3 powerful, engaging questions instantly booted up a mindset for each of them to launch the day and engage with themselves first and with other people. And it resulted not only in a change of themselves, but how there's a contamination effect of good stuff or bad stuff. We'll talk about that at a different time. But that becomes so obvious. So try it. Write down three questions that put you in a peak state. Each morning, do this for a week. Each morning, answer those three empowering questions and feel the answer. You may want to revise the questions or add new ones or change them out. But do three first thing every morning. Because remember, you're already asking questions. You're just deciding the choice architecture of what you focus on. This just changes the focus to consciously engineer the questions that will empower you. So this, I think, is useful to regulate a state of mind. Here's something that I've touched on, but I want to present this now as a model through this example. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Roger Reed, remember we talked about this initially, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. During practice, he had his players develop a mantra. He came on as a new coach, so he could get away with doing some new stuff. He had his players develop a mantra before each free shot. You'll see this, and I referenced the master states of mind out of this earlier discussion. A mantra is a cue, a focus, and a physiology. Remember, focus and physiology are the two most powerful ways to change a state of mind or to regulate a state of mind. A cue simply boosts it up. He suggested the focus phrase of relaxed and smooth as he stepped up to the free throw line, as each player did, but emphasized the player determine his own mantra. Additionally, he would have someone start with dribbling the ball twice, and while they did this, to breathe in deeply and to breathe out any tension while they said that focus phrase. So the cue, the focus, and the physiology of the deep breath. Now, he had them do this each time in practice, but he also, during practice, would suddenly blow the whistle, have them go to the line, and shoot under the same kind of pressure. When you're just fouled, that's not a time. You have lovely thoughts and feel relaxed. You have to go to the line and do it. That's a true regulation of a state of mind. So when they made their free shot, they got a break. They didn't. They took four laps. And the pressure was everybody on the team took four laps. So this was simulating game pressure. After 2 years, the team was number one in their division nationwide. This is how effective performance science and simply application to strategic coaching can be to help someone regulate their state of mind. Second element to map changes, powers in the focus. We each have a focus that we are determining. The focus in the coaching model is determined by the client. Quantum mechanics offers us some explanation. The quantum Zeno effect, Zeno, says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. The brain rewires. And believe it or not, the quantum Zeno effect was initiated by a fellow shrink, a buddy of mine who's at UCLA. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus, to look at possibility. The brain connection literally become mind maps and subsequently influence the reality that we see. So this validates, and neuroscience validates, that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but focusing on the awareness of choice. So anyone who thinks, well, we need to go deeper, you never have to go deeper. You never have to go back to the origins. Leave that for therapy. and counseling and let people get stuck. What we do in coaching is to look at now and next, the choice architecture of this moment, to look at the possibility and the next step. Because often the reason that somebody's stuck or what looks like resistance may simply be they don't know what the first step is. So we as coaches will help them simply by doing an elaborate version of when somebody has a lot of trouble, pick one. Even though you know this, and I knew this. I had done this with scores of clients. My wife came into my office one day, and she saw me looking kind of exasperated, and I said, yeah, they're just so much for me to do right now. And as she spun around on her left foot and made one step to the door, she said at the same time, just pick one. I knew that. How many people and how well I had been paid to do that. It was elusive at that moment. Oh, yeah, that's right. So now the law of attraction is also based in neuroscience. If you lay a nail and a paper clip side by side, nothing happens. If you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. Why? The molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction. This is what you do with your energy field when you focus. All of you is going in the same direction, focused, and you have power. Now, in the film The Secret, I'm sure most of you have seen the film The Secret, that's based on the law of attraction, the adage there is ask, believe, and receive. I think they got the first two right, but I think they missed the third. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway, ask, believe, receive, or align the lotto balls for you. You know, trust me on that one. I can save you a couple of bucks. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write your story. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this. Ask, believe, create. The ABCs. Ask, believe, create. My grandmother offered her critique, my favorite grandmother, of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She just simply said, wishes don't wash dishes. So the paradox is we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on and what we then come to believe. So the power of focus needs to be accurate and aligned right. Instead of, I want to get out of debt, that's a negative focus. I want to lose weight. Focus is on something negative. And here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. You know what's going to happen next. Here's a quote, simply put, way simpler than it would, and a briefer amount of time than it would take me, as you know, by Dr. Joseph Murray. Your unconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your unconscious mind works to make that true. So this is the essence of what we know from quantum physics and neuroscience. Now, in addition to our individual field, there's a collective field. Remember when I talked a few moments ago about, in the example in the Vistage group, about the contagion effect? And you can tap into and resonate with this field, the collective field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this a unified field theory. Basically, the human mind and body are bundles of energy but interact with the larger energy field. This is how we can read people, how we can focus our choices and determine our flow. So when you're grounded and centered, these are physics terms, by the way, it opens doors and creates synchronicity in terms of performance. This is a state of mind sustained that you practice and perform. It's the zone. being in flow. And there's a whole flow psychology that can be integrated and informs what I'm talking about now. So for the law of attraction, most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want or want to avoid. And remember, most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to consciously, specifically target the outcome that you want. So let's do a brief exercise. You're on mute. So if you don't mind disturbing your partner or your dog or your cat, let's do this out loud. I would like you, after I make a brief statement, just three or four words, I'd like you to say out loud, your wish is my command. Okay? You're going to say, your wish is my command. Here's the first one. I'm tired. Say yours out loud. Your wish is my command. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I just worked out. I'm putting away $300 from my checking account every month to my retirement fund. Now, reflect on how you experienced the first three and the last three. Your unconscious mind does not look at positive or negative. It's like the old style camera on the image. Your unconscious cannot distinguish positive or negative, just the focus. If you focus on being tired, late, overworked, overweight, then that's going to be your experience. If you focus on eating healthily, working out, you're going to be energized. Now, it's not magical. This requires discipline, but that's exactly what you guys are paid for and paid so well if you charge what you're worth. This is why people also don't have a spectacular result, because spectacular results require mind and brain consistency for a number of days without resistance to change and reverting back to old patterns. Here are a couple of quotes. Wisdom is learning what to overlook. That's William James, the father of American psychology. The other quote, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. And that's my favorite grandmother, the secret critic. So here's a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson, you may have heard this, about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, my son, the battle is between two wolves inside us. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, greed, arrogance, resentment. The other is good, joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness. The grandson thought about this for a moment. And then asked his grandfather, which wolf wins? The old Cherokee simply said, the one you feed. So, three, visualize changes. There's an illustration of this in the work about a visualization exercise, because a visualization will align the energy field and have the same impact as actually seeing something. Your brain can't tell the difference between when you visualize something and when you actually see it with your optic nerve. And I just want to refer you to that, because there is a systematic way to create a vision and help your clients with it. In fact, I will send, I want to check to see if this is in the workbook that you have. If it's not, I'll send you an attachment. It's a chapter in a earlier book, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual about visualization and the accompanying affirmations. The visualization rewires your brain, and the affirmations revise mind software. So this is something that I think can be very helpful to you. An example here that we touched on before is when you visualize where you want to be in terms of weight. And think about how very different that is than when you have something external that you're trying to fit into, a diet or some kind of structure. The visualization of your ideal body image revises your software, and that's what can inform all the decisions rather than a focus on weight or overweight or various things that can be not only misleading but distracting. So the art of a vision is the affirmations that support getting there. The science of the vision, the neuroscience, is that you create the brain changes. So I think that can be helpful in terms of how you can create in a more systematic way what you do. So here's an important distinction as you look at how you can simply orchestrate these changes. While your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you see physically and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can, and your conscious mind then has to incorporate this image, this vision, into an evolving story to include and assemble that as part of your story. Here's a prelude, an adumbration for step 7 to revise mind software. This is about identity. Think about it in a practical way in this way, and think about working with clients and see if this applies or your own changes. We always, the most powerful force in the human psyche is your identity, because your identity is a bedrock anatomical reality in your brain. If you initiate any change, unless you incorporate that into your fundamental identity, it'll revert back. Same with a client. So it's important that you, as a mentor coach, will be helping your client transform, apply and transform an evolving change into their story to make it part of how and who they see themselves to be, their identity. We're going to come back to that in step 7 and look at some of how to do that. So here are the key elements, three fundamental key elements about doing something different, particularly what you envision. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly to consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be metabolized as part of your sense of self, your identity. Otherwise, it will be lost or evaporate, or just will revert back, because that's the brain's job description, is to go back to the default mode. So you have to outsmart your brain in this way. And 3, be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal. It's not visualizing getting there. It's having achieved it, the entire experience of being there. Visualization creates and crystallizes possibility into something very specific that can change the brain. Here's an example of that, about how a vision can serve as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it and live into it. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was in prison, he essentially was isolated, had no physical activity, but he knew he needed to do something to make it through this time and not go crazy. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on 2 occasions. He had 2 99s. Everything else was triple digits. So he decided to visualize golf. every day when he woke up, he would imagine driving to his favorite golf course, getting out, warming up, taking some swings, smelling the flowers, appreciating everything, made each shot, walked to it. So each day, he would spend 7 to 8 hours imagining playing golf for 7 years. When he was released from his captivity after playing golf 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision of mind over matters. In mapping changes, number 4, insight changes the brain. Now, we've talked about this, about how the framework of challenge, of opportunity, of possibility can create insight, or at least simply looking at things in a different way, not going down the problem pathway that's already etched in the brain and etching it further, but looking at new possibilities. This generates not just new neuronal activity, but the beginning of new networks and pathways, neural networks and pathways in the brain. Here's an example. An aha experience, a moment of insight. At that instant, when someone has an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is created. If you look at that person's brain with an fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, at that instant of insight, 3 different parts of their brain lights up. And that transforms that person into a different state of mind that is more synthetic and creative and integrative. That's why aha moments can be change-making and inspirational to continue and want to do more. And think about, and this is one related question, what about the brain's desire to repeat and do the same things again and again, even though it's limiting? That's the default mode, but that can be addressed by the moment of insight, which can become more powerful. Now, your client will not get a moment of insight. They will not have this brain change when you subtly make suggestions or directives or ghostwrite their story or ask them to look at things in a different way that you might suggest. So it needs to come from the client with you, the coach, as the catalyst for that experience. As important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention hardwires it into the brain circuit. Now, let's go back to that fMRI and the person hooked up who's waiting patiently for us to use another example. With that aha, juxtapose this. When that person is given facts, information, a directive, an order, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. Now, their experience when you offer a suggestion or a solution or something to do, it ends dissonance, it ends discomfort for both you and the client. So in a way, both you and the client want to end that discomfort of exploration and not knowing and looking at things in a new and different way. Both of you want you to tell the client what to do. Now, never mind that it won't work, but it ends temporarily the dissonance. So there will always be that temptation. So you can meet those needs by doing things like offering teleseminars and training and doing presentations. Get it out of your system that way and work with your client by collaboratively framing from their story development, them as the protagonist. So to analyze, plan, think, and organize, that's important. Payday comes, though, with action. So this is number 5, take action. Vincent van Gogh put it really simply. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," by all means paint, then that voice will be silenced. Here's how you will see and hear this principle manifest in your coaching client. A limiting assumption to believe that they need to have confidence in order to proceed, or that they need to be confident in some way or have experience in some way in order to proceed. You don't need motivation to proceed. Remember, we talked about that before. You just need a plan and to put it into action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are important. But the world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. Payday comes with action. Winners develop a plan and set it into motion. Remember, we said initially, it's not just the goal. Pretty much everybody has the same goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. The difference is the system. That's our specialty. And coaching is to help someone co-create a system. Winners develop a plan, set it into motion. It may not be perfect, but they self-correct and keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes to produce results. This is one of the things that we listen for in working with our clients, would be limiting assumptions, such as what you need in order to proceed. You know, comfortable, confident, sky needs to be a little bit bluer, I need this before this can happen. All of those can be limiting assumptions. And that's what you're paid to help someone address the things they may not be conscious of. And think about the definition of an unconscious bias is that someone's not aware of it. So when you make it conscious, it's no longer unconscious. This is what you do in coaching, among other things, in focusing on the process, not just the content. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to have one, a system, and to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can also capture imagination and inspire passion. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really kind of goofy and kind of unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. Since then, he's published $1.5 billion worth of books and programs. So he decided to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car initially. It didn't hurt when he gave everybody on the O.J. Simpson jury a copy and they were seen reading it at the break. That was good marketing. So to get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. 6, identity transformation. This is what we'll return to as we talk about step 7 next time. A new experience or idea needs to be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The mindset of identity then incorporates new experiences and integrates it as part of an evolving self, a component of one's identity. Otherwise, it may not be integrated and prone to be dismissed as a not me or simply a change that was situational. Here's a summary then of our last two steps in terms of practical application. This is in the outline. The two steps, 4 and 5, decide what to change and map the changes. Here's a practical application in just slightly different words. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors and not on problems in order to create new brain pathways. Simply identifying a problem won't solve it. And that's how people, and I can feel free to say this because of practicing 25 years as a psychotherapist, psychoanalyst, people come to the end of their old stories, but they may not have a map or a system for a new story for their life or business. This is how I first was exposed to professional coaching. And the coaches are referred to when someone completed a successful analysis or therapy. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits. And the focus here, the eye on the prize, can begin to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions. New insight and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, to say it too simplistically, intellectual and emotional. And this is just a rewording of what we just talked about. Facilitate insight rather than giving advice or suggestions. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect ideas and energy flow to the new idea and to what's next, to the system and the focus. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. An obstacle is a personal story creation. It's not a noun. It's not something that's out there that you overcome or circumvent or in some way get beyond. It's not there until you create it. We can return to that. Focus aligns and directs energy and effort. So focus on possibilities, opportunities. Emphasize positive adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. So that means when someone says, well, I know I need to, what do you commit to do? And remember, since SMART goals have a T on the end, by when? Or simply, what will you put into action by the next time we meet? What do you specifically commit to? And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self. How your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way. No longer in the old story, but creating the new story, even though it may feel uncomfortable and at times uncertain. You stick with it and see what you continue to create. We're in discussion mode now, so I'm interested to hear thoughts or questions or clarifications. Let me mention as a beginning, if there are things that you'd like to discuss further or just have more of a conversation about, I'd like to offer extending our next seminar, and from the top of the hour until for 10 or 15 minutes or if you want to use that time, just to have a discussion of things that we may not have talked about or still may be confusing. Jot down anything you want to be sure we discuss or send it to me in an email. But for right now, first, any clarifications or thoughts or questions about what we've just talked about?
Hi, Dr. Deeb. I have, this is Erin.
Welcome. Hey, how are you?
Good. I'm good. Thank you. So I was curious, you had mentioned that confidence, experience, and motivation are not necessary. And, you know, winners develop a plan and set it into action. What about those who come to you who have this sort of identity rooted in believing that they're in a state of apathy?
Well, that can be understandable if someone's consistent experiences that, but you be that person and I'll be you or coaching. So how would that present? Can you do that just in a sentence or two and I'll respond to that? Would that be helpful to you to look at a specific instance and how to respond to it? Okay, go. You're that. you're that stuck client now. What,
right.
you, what say you? And remember, I can interrupt you at any time, right? Do you agree?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, all right, go.
All right, so, yeah, I really want, you know, I see that my life would be so much better if I woke up earlier, but honestly, I'm just in this place where I feel like I don't have any, you know, joy or appreciation for life, and I just, I've lost kind of my motivation for life. And
okay, let's look at that specifically. Has there been a time in the past when you have woken up and felt the joy of wanting to embrace the day, specifically at any point?
Yeah.
What was your first thought when you woke up on that day?
Hmm. Yeah, I guess.
No, remember, not guessing, but remember specifically if you can,
mm-hmm.
because I think it'll help us to understand and focus. What was your first thought? Quote.
I'm glad to be alive.
Okay. That boots up a very positive mindset. And that's the software program you engaged in the day when you began, at least, in a positive mindset because you framed what immediately followed in that way. Now, how can you use that and that experience to begin your day tomorrow morning?
Yeah, so it would have to be something I believe, because right now I don't believe.
Okay, just a second, because is going to go back into an old story, I would bet. I'd put fairly good money on that. So it would have to be something you believe. No, you didn't believe that before. You said that, and you lived into the belief. So what would you say specifically tomorrow to initiate a positive state of mind? A single quote in a sentence.
I'm glad it's spring.
Okay. So I would suggest that you possibly write that down, try it out. If you decide to look a little bit more at this, consider having an appointment with yourself for at least 10 minutes before you go to bed and write down one to two other things that you recall or that you now believe would put you also in that positive state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And write down those two or three questions, one at least, but two or three, and answer those in the morning to
mm-hmm.
see if establishing a state of mind is a framework that you can create that will affect your entire experience.
Sure. Okay, yeah, thank you. That answered my question. I think just going off of that as well, just quickly, I was curious about, you said the three questions that we can ask.
Yeah.
Could you give some examples of those
questions? You just did for you. Because it was from a successful creation and result. So that's going to be more meaningful to you than anything I possibly could have run in as a play or ghostwritten. And when you're in that state of mind, if you decide to do that appointment with yourself, no interference, no telephone, no ping, no text, nothing. Immerse yourself in that state of mind and get in that flow and think about that experience and what else might be there. That's going to be more meaningful than a bunch of examples or reading three self-help books, because that's the application for you and what's powerful for you, because you create a framework and a mindset to engage the day and to live into it. That can be juxtaposed to any belief that you have had previously, even though that belief is hardwired in your brain. And the conclusions from it are also hardwired. Well, I got to have confidence first. I got to, you know, all these contingency. No, you created an experience. If you created something once, you can create it again. Stay with what works. That's all we got to do in coaching.
Mm-hmm.
If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So thank you, Erin, for doing that with me. And you were a great client. I know, I apologize, we're out of time. If you want to discuss something, jot it down, and we'll extend the time officially next time and go over beginning at the top of the hour, or actually a bit before that, for any discussion that you have or examples or things that you want to elaborate on. So thanks very much for all of your input, the kind words, and your engagement here. So I look forward to our last session next week and to a discussion that that follows. Guys, take good care of yourselves and have a super week. Bye now.
Good night, Dave.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.